for you on the show.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just so broke, you won't believe. Can't get a dollar out of me. And as far as I can see, I'm losing control like a bad disease. No, I just can't get relief. I've been shot down by the life police. Cause every day I try to rise, but I can't succeed. Can anybody find a cure for me? You can be bitter, bitter, bitter. Or you can be better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Out of champagne, don't worry, little children, and don't complain. Whoa, remember your golden, the bad song sugar cane. When life gives you lemon, take lemonade.
Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hama.
Now every day is like a brand new year. I throw my hands up in the air like I just don't care. I'm moonwalking down the street feeling like, oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Well, at the bottom of the gas now, I see clear. So now I laugh just a little more. I'm getting much taller than I did before. I know I'm not where I need to be, but I thank God that I'm not where I used to be. I used to be bitter, bitter, bitter. But now I feel better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. I would say for a reason that I can't explain. Got something new to believe in. I'm awakened again. How many miracles I have in each day. If I can just get out of my own way. Well, life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne.
I'm a man of many talents. I'm more talented than Alex Boyer. More people ask for my autograph than for him. They're not going to tell you that. That little, like, rap part, where we're like, no, 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 lemonade, no. So dumb. It's already been done like a billion times. But luckily I was in the shot because I saved it. Redemption. You're welcome, Alex.
Good evening. As you know, that is my opening theme song. If Life, not If Life, it's the Lemonade song. It's by Alex Boyer. This is If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show, and I'm your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, also known as Miss Delicious. My show is a show is for the tame and the untamed. It's serious with a dash of humor. Life is what you make it. You may be rich but unhappy, or broke and happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many pity parties did you have? Ever went from being a victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you could swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor? Ever laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just have something to get off your chest? If you answer yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. You get free exposure if you're a business owner, starting a business, just want to share information of importance. I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chop it up. Sorry, there'll be no discussion, religion, or politics. If you're interested in being a co-host or a guest, you can email me at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that email address is gjdelicious37@gmail.com. And I have a great show this evening. I have a guest coming on. And you guys, like I mentioned in the when I sent out the advertisement, you need to get a pen and a pad so you can take notes. I'm going to give you a few seconds to do that because you're going to need them, I'm telling you. And this evening's guest is Mitchell Levy. He is the AHA guy at AHA.com, who empowers experts, thought leaders, and businesses to share their geniuses. His superpower is extracting the genius from your head in a two-hour interview so that his team can ghostwrite your book and make you an Amazon bestseller. He is an accomplished entrepreneur who has created 20 businesses in Silicon Valley, including four publishing companies that has published over 800 books. Mitchell is a text and international best-selling author with 60 business books. He's provided strategy consulting to over 100 companies, has advertised over 500 CEOs, advised over 500 CEOs on critical business issues, and has been chairman of the board of a NASDAQ list company. In addition to these accomplishments, he's been happily married for 29 years and regularly spends 4 weeks annually in a European country with his family and friends. So without further ado, we're going to bring on Mitchell Levy. Good evening, Mitchell.
Oh, good evening. If I was live, I'm sorry if I was coughing.
Well, we all sometimes sorry. Get those little tickles in our throat from time to time. How are you, darling?
I know. Oh, I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Yes. Can you give us a little, bit about how you even got into some of the things that you got? What was the first thing that you got into that made you keep going forward to, get to where you are now?
Wow. Such a broad question. How about such a delicious question? I can answer it any way I want. Probably the way I'd answer that is simply, and having gone to Europe, if for anyone who's ever gone to Europe, as an American who only speaks a single language, English, you feel really stupid when you go to Europe and you meet somebody who will talk to you in English and then turn the corner and talk in French and German and Spanish and multiple languages. It's like crazy amazing. That said, although I only speak English, I do speak engineer and finance and marketing and sales. And my ability to translate requirements and understanding from one group of people to another is one of those things that I noticed in the business world I was particularly good at. And so I've always sort of done that. And then what I've coupled on that is the ability to sort of look at trends and see things that are happening. And so I've always, since being an entrepreneur in 1997, what I've wanted to do is always get in front of a trend and then ride it. And in the past, I've ridden trends till they die and expire. So I was known as Mr. E-commerce during the dot-com days. And, of course, the dot-bus came, and that sort of put an end to that, although e-commerce, of course, is now huge as possible now. And what I'm doing now is I'm actually creating my own trend I'm jumping on the back of what's happening today, but going out there and changing people's thoughts and opinions in a way that this will be very common nature and not a long period of time. So I don't know if I answered your question, but it felt like a good way to start.
Yeah, well, that's what I had asked, so that's how you got started. now, you also do leadership, thought leadership. Can you explain to the listening audience what thought leadership is and why people should care?
Sure. So, you know, the thing that's interesting is anytime you have a term like that, so the term being thought leadership, anytime I have a term like that, it changes over time. So in the old days, let's just say anything that's 10 or 20 years ago, and we'll call that the old days, for those that have a certain age associated with them, they're like, oh my God, really? You're calling me old? I'm not calling you old. I'm just saying in the old days. A thought leader, they were given to us by the recording companies, by the publishing companies, from the broadcast studios. We were told who we were going to listen to, what actors we were going to see on TV, and what books we were going to read. And in those days, the thought leaders were also told how they should present themselves to the public. And when a thought leader would get in front of an audience, particularly if somebody's teaching or they have a particular approach, they would say jump, and their flock would say how high. Well, since the advent of the web and the internet, life has changed dramatically. Everyone who wants has a microphone. Everyone who wants has a camera and can create their own video recordings. And so now thought leadership is one of those things that anyone can have and create their own megaphone to the world. So what it comes down to is who's listening and how and why. And what's important today is to create an audience. So to do the types of things that people find compelling, like having a show titled If Life Gives You Lemons, Make Martinis, that's a beautiful show. I don't have to know anything about it to get excited about wanting to be a guest on the show. Right, so you have to do something that makes you compelling, and of course you have to execute in such a way that people want to pay attention to you. So thought leadership is, I call it in today's world, synonymous as being a recognized expert. So I use those terms synonymously. And what it ultimately means, and I did a TED talk on this, it's we do business with those that we know, like, and trust. And so thought leadership, or being a thought leader, is being the recognized expert, being the person that you want to turn to when you have a particular problem. And that would be your job is to put yourself out there in such a way that people can then associate you with a particular problem that they may have and go, oh, that person could help solve my problem. I.e., you become the thought leader, you become the recognized expert, you be the person they turn to. And that thought leadership is one of those things that you need to continually be sharing. And it doesn't mean you need to create completely new stuff all the time. It just means you need to be in their radar. You need to be available. You need to be one of those things, those people that people, once again, want to turn to, because they may not have that problem today when you first hear them, but if you're continually reaching out, when they do have that problem, they sort of also need to be reminded that you're around, and then they turn to you. And so that's what thought leadership is. It's being able to share the right amount of content and to be able to share it with the right audience so that, once again, you can be known for one of those people who could solve a problem. You're the thought leader in a space. You're the recognized expert people turn to.
Okay.
How's that for an answer?
That's a very good answer. So basically, it's someone who is more or less an expert on whatever it is that you're having your problems. Say, like, maybe you're having problems starting a business. You would go to someone who's an expert on that, and they give you their leadership on it. Is that correct?
Exactly. Perfect. Or let's say you have a business and things happen in the government. We don't talk politics. I don't talk politics or religion either. Things happen in the government and the tax laws change. Well, who do you turn to? Well, you turn to the person who you recognize as your expert to help you solve your problem, right? It's the who do you turn to at when you have a particular, I mean, when we were kids and we were sick, mom or dad were our thought leaders. Mom, I'm sick.
Right.
What do I do? Right. We turn to mom. Right. So,
right.
So it's the same concept, you know, and the world is as big as you want to make it in terms of who you turn to.
Okay. That sounds reasonable enough to me. That answered the question. And, you know, listening audience, I hope you got that. Now, I have a few more questions that I really would like to ask you. You're also an author and a publisher. Why should a person write a book, and what should they write about?
Well, I could ask you that question too, can't I? As a author and publisher yourself.
Yes, you can.
So tell me. Oh, you asked me first. Oh, I got it.
Well, if you like, I can answer that. I'll answer it as you know myself.
Yeah, go ahead.
For the listening audience.
Yeah.
The reason why I wrote a book, well, because it goes back years and years ago when I was very young. I am an introvert, and I used to write things down, little notes, and I had a little diary. I would write things in it, and, you know, I just would write constantly things I did or things that happened. So as I got a little older, when I was in a boarding school, I wrote a short story, and, you know, my peers, they loved it, and they were asking me, well, how did you do that, and, you know, where did you get this information? But I actually believe that I was born to write because I've been doing this since I was 9 years old. So I wrote my first short story when I was 14. Then I started writing poetry, and I liked the idea of putting my ideas in my head on paper. You know, because when you're a writer, and I'm quite sure you know this, you can write about things that anything you want, you can put people in it, and you can do certain things when you write a story that you can't do in real life. You know, so that's what I had enjoyed about writing, because I have five books that I've written. One book I published under my publishing company, but the last book I wrote, and I'm working on my sixth book. But I write mostly about fiction, fictional stories, but the information that is in my books mm-hmm. is based on true events that actually happened in my life or even someone's life I was associated with or grew up with or someone that I knew or, you know, even having a conversation with someone, I could, you know, take that conversation and turn it into a story, which I did. The last book, and you know, it's just so therapeutic for me to write because some of the things, like I said in the book, events actually happen, you know, to me or you know, to people that I know, people I grew up with, family members, you know. So that's why I write, and I think that if anybody has a story to tell, or they're feeling like they want to get something off their chest. Write it down. You know, this is why, you know, I started writing because, like I said, I was an introvert and I communicated better down, you know, writing people notes or, you know, and at one point people were getting me to write love letters for them, you know, to their significant other. But
nice.
I love to write and I love to read and I am dyslexic, so... But that never had any type of, didn't stop me from moving forward with, you know, my writing because I never let that impede anything that I could do as far as my academics, you know, reading, writing, math or whatever. I just had to strive a little harder, you know, and sometimes I have short-term memory, you know, at times. And, you know, but when I really want to write, when I'm writing, I'm in a whole different zone. It's just like, it's, you know, I'm just in a whole different zone. So it's you know, it's even therapeutic for me to write. And like I said, I love to write, and I would suggest if anybody's, you know, because I've had people tell me, well, I got a story. I really need to tell my story, and, you know, this happened, that happened, and I tell them, well, you know, you got to tell it. And they say, well, how do I do it? Just write. And there's no particular way for you to write when you're writing your story, because I have an excellent, excellent editor. You know, he edits very well. So, you know, and I know that, you know, my stories are all good. I've got great reviews on them. And I am a very good storyteller, you know, because like I said, it's a mix with true events and, you know, things that actually happen. And that's how I like to tell my stories, because it gives people who read them a sense of putting themselves in that position. Because my very first book, one girl's review was, wow, I feel just like Nina. Nina's this and blah, 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 blah. I enjoy this. And, you know, she was really into it. You know, and I've told my books read like movies. So, you know, that makes me feel good, and that just keeps me wanting to go on and on and on. I have a million stories in my head, you know, and I'm getting them out one by one. So that's why I write, you know, and I think,
got it.
Right. You know, get it out there.
So I hear you, and I'm so glad I asked. So let's make some clarifications, because I'll say some things that you like and some things that you may not like. So I'm talking about nonfiction books, specifically nonfiction books. And more importantly, what I'm talking about are people who are writing nonfiction books where their book is essentially their business card. Their book is their calling card. Their book is in the realm of we do business with those we know, like, and trust. The book is that vehicle that could help you be known. The book is that vehicle that could help garner a little bit of trust. And so that's what I focus on. So just the for those people who are writing fiction or who are writing with the desire for cathartic reasons, right, because writing is helpful because it allows you to release a story, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just going to focus on the part of the world of anyone who's listening who has a business today and you want to get more business. And that's what I focus on. And so why do you write a book? It's very simple. Since the Bible, the book has been that vehicle that we look at as the source, the expert, the expertise. And so having a book, that a nonfiction book that talks about what you do in your business, by definition, is significantly better than a good-looking business card because it's a published book. If you can make it an Amazon best-selling book, then it's even better because you have another accolade associated with you. And then what's fascinating, because it is now so easy to publish a book, the thing to be thinking about is, how do you get, if you're in business today, not you don't want to just get one book on the marketplace. How do you get a book on the marketplace for every customer base you serve and for every problem you serve? What is the point of pain? What is the pain that people come to you? Why is it that people want to do business with you? And for every problem you solve and for every audience you solve it for, you should have a book. So I currently have, I know the bio said 60. One of my people told me that I've written 61 books. We've published 800. And what I focus on when I talk to a author, when we actually are ghostwriting a book, I start out by saying, who is your audience? So who are your customers today? Who are your prospects? What problem do you solve for them? And then as they're talking about who they are and what they solve and what they do, as I'm listening, I'm crafting the title of the book. Because if the title of your book has in it the problem you're solving, then you don't ever have to sell yourself. So I'll give you an example. I did a TED Talk, and it's called Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader. And I decided in terms of marketing the TED Talk, I'm going to create a book as well. So I have a book with the same title, Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader. So let's imagine I'm in a room of 50 business executives, and we all get 10 to 15 seconds to introduce ourselves. And, you know, a lot of times what people say is, hey, I'm a published author, speaker, coach, trainer, and you still don't know what they do, right? Because if everyone else in the room is one of those things. So for me, I'll say what you said up front, Mitchell Levy, Aha Guide, Aha Dot. I empower experts, thought leaders, and companies to share their genius, and I'm an international best-selling author of the book and TED Talk, Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader. So what was interesting is that I didn't actually say anything that says, come to me, buy my services, I'm a good accountant, you know, I could do your taxes, right? What I said mm-hmm. was just things which were facts, things that I do. And
right.
to say I am an international best-selling author of the book, and then you get the title of the book, and if you're in the audience and you go, I need to be seen, I need to be heard, maybe I need to talk to Mitchell. So the reason why somebody needs to write a book is that, A, it gives them credibility. It also gives them an opportunity to talk about themselves without talking about themselves, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
if you have a book and you're, let's say you're giving away your book on Kindle, or you want to send somebody your PDF, or you buy 10 copies to hand out, and every time you go to a networking event, you give out two or three, right?
Mm-hmm.
You now have this content you're sharing with somebody, and when you talk about yourself, and they go, oh, man, you know, there might be some value in this book, and to, can I give you a copy? They're expecting you to say, can I sell you a copy? Can you say, can I give you a copy? And they go, oh, I love one. And then what I often say is, you know, there is a cost to that. And I say, the cost is if you like it, give me a 5-star review on Amazon.
Right.
Right? So, and here's the most important part. Then you do an autograph. Now, when you sign your book for somebody else, what you're doing is you don't just sign your name. I mean, so many people do that. You now have an opportunity to craft a customized message for just that person, right? And so having done 61 books, what I can tell you is every book has its own custom message that I typically include, and then I'll add something specific for the person I'm interacting with right then and there so that they feel like it's important. And so having a book that talks about the pain point you solve is one of those beautiful things because, and particularly once you customize it with your autograph, you're actually giving somebody something that's a reminder of who you are. And typically it'll go on their desk or on their bookshelf. So when they actually stumble across a problem, if they don't have it at the moment, here's the other thing on networking. You never, when you interact with somebody, you never say, hey, can I help you? Can I solve your problem? And here's what I charge, right? You don't say that. You help them understand who you are, and if they have that issue, they're going to reach out to you, or you can say, hey, listen, let's make some time. Happy to talk about your thing at some other point in time. You never go for the close right away. You just go
right.
for the awareness, because that's how people can trust you. If you care about them and demonstrate that you care about them, it's a form of how do you get people to like you? How do you get them if they know you because they're interacting with you? That's great. How they like you, you demonstrate you care about them. And so that book is that thing that helps you be known as somebody who could help solve their problem. And once again, if it's become a best-selling book, then people start trusting you that you could help solve their problem.
That's very good. And you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned the fact of how you actually get your books out there, because my sixth book, like I had mentioned, I'm working on, is called The Scent of a Man. And that book is a book. That book is for women who think that there are no more good men left. You know, they're all saying that the good men are either dead, in jail, gay, or married. And all those are definitely not good men. But it's just a book to dispel the myth that there are some good men out there and how to go about finding these good men. And it has a wealth of information in the book, because I have conversations with, you know, some of my girlfriends, and they've been married, and they say, I'll never get married again because of this. I don't trust men. All men are dogs and this and that. And that's not true. All men are not dogs. As a matter of fact, I really don't consider men as being dogs. That's an animal, but they may display some animal ways. But, you know, it's just a book to help women realize that you have to be patient. You have to have patience. and you have to use your intuition, and you also have to be ready to be with this person that you get that's going to be the man for you. So, yes, I am writing that particular book.
Fascinating. And yes, I kind of actually having being a man, I would say not all men are dogs. But what one of the things that's fascinating to think about, just for your book, is let me give you an example. So I want to show the differences between men and women, a way that really sort of hit home for me. I had a friend who had stayed at my house when he was doing some business. I'm in Silicon Valley, so he stayed at my house when he was doing some business a couple of years ago, and you know, we would end up talking to the wee hours of the morning, and he came back in probably just a couple months ago, and we were talking, and we spent about 3 hours outside, and he basically told me he got divorced and told me the story. We were mostly talking about business, and so he told me about getting divorced and what happened and all that stuff, and not a whole lot on that. And what was interesting about our conversation is I, as a man, I'm focused on, and most men are focused on, hunting and gathering. So I'm still curious. I mean, I heard the divorce thing, and we didn't spend a lot of time on it. And what I really cared about is, how's his business doing? Has it affected his business? How's he getting more business? What's going on? I really asked all questions about hunting and gathering. As soon as I told my wife, the first words out of her mouth were, who's living at the house? Where's he living? I didn't even ask, spent 3 hours with him, didn't even ask that question. Her mind immediately went to food and shelter. And it was one of those classic examples of the difference between men and women. There's no right or wrong. Right? It's just simply that was what was appropriate here. I'm like, that's a good question, honey. I don't really know, right? Because it didn't come to my mind to even think about it. And it's one of the recognitions, and this is not just the male-female thing. It's every human being is different. And if you want to be successful at interacting with others, you've got to kind of figure out who they are and where they're coming from, and to be able to understand that words that somebody speaks is going to mean something different than if somebody else says the same words. And you've got to kind of understand that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt, because everybody has their own opinion and everybody has their own thought patterns. So, you know, you and your wife are two different people, and what she had on her mind was totally different from what you and the guy had on their mind, because men are different. We're different, you know, and we think different, we act different, and, you know, that's just how it is, you know, because if when my girlfriends tell me that, you know, they're getting divorced or whatever, I say, well, what happened, you know? Was he cheating on you? You know, because I'm quite sure they want to talk about it. You know, opposed me saying, well, let's go to the club. Let's go get some drinks. You know, because when people are feeling a certain way, they look for that certain comfort. And if you're not being sympathetic with them, then that cuts off a friendship sometimes, you know, because they'll say, well, I tried to tell her, but she didn't even want to listen, so I'm not talking to her anymore. You know, so I get exactly what you're saying. Yeah, but that's...
Yeah.
So
going back to the book, the question I'd ask you, the question I ask for anyone who's listening, the way the world works today, you don't make money from book sales. Now we've actually... published 800 books, and I write very nice royalty statements to a number of our authors. That said, the authors who I'm writing nice royalty statements to are typically making somewhere between 5 to 10 times more money, if not more, by the consulting or product sales they're doing with what their book is about. Once again, this is different than fiction. This is definitely different than nonfiction. But the authors who are most successful in our stable are those people who basically are using the book as the door opener, as the opportunity to get known, as the opportunity to generate and garner trust, the opportunity to spread their message of who they are, not to educate, not to train, not to teach, but to generate and garner trust to allow those people who could be interested in them to get into their network and ultimately close a product and service that's significantly different. And so I just gave you a really basic example. What we used to do is we used to spend a lot of time writing books, and the books themselves in nonfiction world were attended, and many people still do this, but they write the book with the goal of teaching and training and educating and transferring somebody's mindset. And at the end of the day, what's the most you could charge for a book like that? It's typically like $19.95 is people's acceptance level for a book that's a paperback. Some people want to pay less. So instead, I'd spend a whole lot less time on the book and then take all that teaching, training, learning, educating, and put it into an online course, which is relatively easy to do these days, and charge $200 for the online course, right? That same content, right? And so instead of now, when you're doing your storytelling, you're educating, you're helping people understand new things, if you put it into an online course, A, it's easier to change and update over time. B, you could charge 10 times the amount of money, if not more. And so it's a different, life has changed, and people are still kind of stuck on just, let's just do a book and make that happen. And so I just wanted to, part of what I think about is the holistic approach to the human. And if that human is a business person, your job as a business person is to optimize the revenue that you can get coming in the door while you're still having a good life and having fun and enjoying your martini.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, okay?
Sounds good.
You're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show at 109.9 Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hosted by Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. For questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And remember, if life gives you lemons, make a martini. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
My life to you all. Listen up. I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book, because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com.
Back to Zero is a fictional story with a dash of reality. It's a tale about Anthony Thomas, a man who lost the most precious things in his life, starting with his first childhood love, Gloria. Tragedy soon followed after losing his mom to cancer, and shortly thereafter, he lost his wife, Lynn, and son, Junior, in a horrific car crash. With each traumatic incident, Anthony was branded, sending him back to zero. 30 years later, Anthony runs into Gloria, and the flames in their hearts are still burning. Gloria, now a law enforcement official who also comes with baggage, a psychotic husband named Wayne Anderson who is out of control. He too is a law enforcement official that's abusive, jealous, and an alcoholic. Wayne treats Gloria miserable. While snooping behind his wife, he finds out that she had research information concerning Anthony on the internet. Wayne goes into a rage of madness like a rabid dog because in his sick, twisted mind, he feels threatened and accuses Gloria of sleeping with Anthony. Often he would evict her from the house, but not realizing the night would come when he forces his wife straight into the arms of Anthony. After spending an intense, earth-shattering night of lovemaking, Gloria opens up and confesses to Anthony that she still loves him. Rekindling their relationship is dangerous, and Wayne will stop at nothing to make his wife and her first love's life a miserable hell while fighting his own demons. Wayne harbors a deep, dark, and deadly secret, one he thought he and only the devil knew. Find out what happens when Gloria uncovers the truth about her abusive, lawless husband's mysterious past. The devastation will bring the three of them together in an explosive confrontation. Find out the shocking secrets Wayne harbored and prepare yourself for who will pay the ultimate price for his lawless actions. Gail Delicious Johnson says, Back to Zero will take you where the law becomes the abuser. Order this fast-paced, action-packed, filled drama by best-selling author Gail Delicious Johnson from her web store at JJ Publishing. That's JAYJAY Publishing.com. Remember, abuse is never an option.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious, and you're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. Again, that number is 646-652-2877. And we're speaking this evening with our guest, Mitchell Levy, the AHA guy. Okay, Mitchell, so we can take up where you left off, or we can go on. I can ask you another question. Will you finish with the second question that I asked you, or?
You tell me.
Well, I'm quite sure that we've gathering a lot of information. I'm taking notes as well, so I hope the listening audience is taking notes, because don't inbox me or text me and ask me, what was he talking about? Anyway, the next question I'd like to ask is, how can a person write a book in 8 hours or less?
My favorite question.
Yes.
So I have two answers there. So should you even spend 8 hours writing the book yourself? So we do ghostwriting. So I'll talk about that afterwards. And then let's answer your question. How do you do it in 8 hours or less? Well, first, I want to redefine what is a book. And in in the world that's today, a book, in my mind, a nonfiction book, the primary premise of the book is to allow the person to be known, right, to help them gather more people and to be able to have some sort of stamp of approval, right, to help them on the trusted part. So when we create books, and I've always, since 2005 and when we started publishing, and as we mentioned, I've published over 800 books. Since 2005, I always try to make it easier for the author to write their own books. And so what we have now is we've created a book series. So I have a book series called 42 Rules, and those books are comprised of 42 500-word articles. And that still takes, even if the articles are written, it still takes between 40 to 60 hours sort of to pull it together and update everything. The book series that one could write in 8 hours or less is our Think Aha series. And those books are comprised of 140 bite-sized quotes and 7 blog posts. And so what happens is I have, if anyone who's interested, you can go to ahathat.com/author. And we have a 3-step process on how to write a book in 8 hours or less. And if you don't mind, I'll tell you about the steps. And at the end of the day, what we have is you have a book. I like books which are about 120 pages long because I love the spine size of 120 pages. And what's really interesting, if it's 140 bite-sized quotes, it's relatively easy to read. It's about a half-hour read if you listen to it on Audible. It is, for some people, they read it in 15 or 20 minutes. And the truth is, if one aha message captures somebody's attention, they don't even need to read your book. So at first, before I talk about the three-step process, let me just tell you about, I'm going to read a quote from my book, Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader. And so I've got a picture of me on the cover. And the book is comprised of 140 bite-sized quotes. And what I decided to do is I wanted to, because the TED Talk was all me, I wanted to have other people as part. I wanted to demonstrate thought leadership. Essentially, to me, 80% of content we share as a thought leader should be somebody else's. So I interviewed 4 other people for a half hour each to be part of my book. And what I want to do is I'm going to read Aha number 4, which was written by Robert Clancy, who's got a 500,000 followers on Facebook. And you'll get a feeling for what an aha message is. So okay. An aha message, the desire of an aha message is to capture somebody's attention, to get them to want to think about the world in a slightly different way. I have an aha moment. I have a lightning flash, right? So aha number 4 says, good thought leaders are at the top of the mountain. Great thought leaders are at the bottom of the mountain, helping others climb up. Right? That was quick, 7 seconds.
Yeah.
But when you hear that, you say to yourself, well, am I a thought leader? Am I a good thought leader? What's going to make me a great thought leader? Am I a great thought leader? How many people have I helped climb up the mountain this week, today, this month? What plans do I have in place to help other people climb up the mountain? What am I doing to get my brand out there and help others be successful? Have I incorporated servant leadership into what I do as a thought leader? That all came from a 7-second aha message. So imagine a book that has 140 of them. It's 140 opportunities for you to capture somebody's attention. You only need one. And so for those people who follow the 3-step process, you can absolutely write your book in 8 hours or less. And so, Gail, would it be okay? Can I tell you about the 3 steps?
Sure.
So step 1 is a Word document. And by the way, once again, if you go to ahathat.com/author, you can follow the 3 steps regardless of whether or not you publish with us. And at least steps 1 and 2 are going to be helpful for you, and I'm going to tell you why step 3 will be helpful as well. So step 1 is a Word document. It's got 4 questions in it. And these are questions you need to ask regardless of, once again, whether or not you publish with us, and that is, who are you? So what's your name? What's your bio? What's your brand? What's your title of your book? What's your subtitle? And question 1 is the most important. So I'll tell you how it reads. Question 1 says, who is your reader and what are their expectations? What question 1 really says is, who is your prospect and what are their pain points? right? So that's a Word document. That will take you about 1 to 2 hours to answer 4 questions because you got to think about what does this mean to your business and who are you and things that are going on. Step number two, that's an easy one. It'll take you about 5 minutes to read. I've curated over 75,000 aha messages. And so step number two is simply it's a one sheet PDF and it's best practices. And simply, how can you write a short aha message that captures somebody's attention? And then step number three, what we do is we provide an Excel spreadsheet. And that Excel spreadsheet is where you would put in your 140 aha messages. And so even if you followed the steps and didn't publish with us, you now have a spreadsheet with aha messages in it that you can cut and paste and share on social media. And so that is what we do, right? Is we help you said in the intro, we help experts share their genius. And so if your genius is solving a point of pain for a particular set of clients, then how can you document that in such a way that you can capture other people's attention who are not your customers today, who just need to recognize that you could solve their issues? And that is where the aha messages come in. And then we have a platform called Aha That. And so at the very minimal, we publish on Aha That. We also turn your book not just into it from an aha book, we turn it into a PDF, a Kindle, a paperback, and a hardcover. And we publish color on the inside, so it really has impact. And on the Aha That platform, we currently have over 700,000 users, and those users are looking for content to share. And we have over 45,000 pieces of content. So if you're looking for content to share on social media, you can go to ahathat.com today, and you could share that content for free. So the platform itself is free to read, free to share content. So if you want to share content on social media, please do. And then we charge and monetize when people are either writing themselves or we write for them.
Okay, so that's when you get into the ghostwriting.
Yes. Yeah, the ghostwriting. So here's, I'm going to make a really bold statement. Mm-hmm. If you're in business today making money and you're solving people's problems and you're not writing a book for cathartic reasons and you're not writing a fiction book, you should not be writing a book. So I would say anyone who's in business who spends a couple hundred hours of writing their own book, and it's not because it's for all the reasons I mentioned. So if it's not a fiction book, if it's not because they have a cathartic reason to write, they're wasting their time. Because that's a really bold statement. In today's world, the most important thing you could do if you're a business person, you can be out there talking to other people who could be your prospects, who could be your clients. And if you don't, somebody else from somewhere around the world will. And so that's why we ghostwrite. When I ghostwrite a book, I'll interview somebody for 2 hours. I'll pull the genius from their head. I will pair them with a graduate from the Aha That Writing School who could relate to that type of content, and we will write the book. The person who is the author, and they're still the author even though they're not writing the initial aha messages or the blog post, the person who's the author, they will spend 2 hours in the interview process, and they'll spend probably another 3 to 8 hours reviewing the content, reviewing the book as we move it along. And so they'll spend a total of 10 hours on their book. Now, let's compare that to if you write yourself. If you write a book that's 120 pages, you're going to spend about 120 hours. It's about an hour a page. And if you decide to publish yourself, what we typically do when we publish for others, we save the author 200 hours because we publish more than just putting it in CreateSpace. We distribute in 80-plus locations, and it's the cover design, copy edit, content edit, distribution. And we also have an audio service now as well that we just introduced. So 200 hours for publishing, 3 hours.
Hello?
So imagine you pay us a fee. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, did
yeah,
I lose
you? Yeah, I can hear you now.
So you pay us a – okay, sorry. So you pay us a fee and spend 10 hours of your life, and within 2 to 3 months you're an Amazon best-selling author. versus spend 320 hours. That difference is 310 hours. So if you spend 310 hours marketing yourself as an Amazon best-selling author and you can't make more than our fees, I would kind of argue that you might be in the wrong business.
So is that far as after you ghostwrite the book or before?
Oh, after you ghostwrite the book. So our elapsed time is 2 to 3 months between the time we start working with you to the time you have a ghostwritten book and it's an Amazon best-selling book.
So is there any guarantee that this book is going to be a bestseller, or is it just that length of time that you're going to give it before people gravitate to it?
So bestseller doesn't necessarily mean that it sells a lot of books and you make a lot of money. Bestseller is a title that you're given on Amazon when you become you either land in the top 100 books for a particular category, or you become number one best-selling book is when you become number one in a particular category. That doesn't mean you've sold a lot of books,
right?
Or you're making a ton of money, but you still become a best-selling author, which also has a certain amount of credibility and cachet associated with it. And do we guarantee it? Guarantee is really hard because so the answer is sort of, not really. What we do, if the author did absolutely nothing, we probably have an 80% chance of getting bestseller or number one best-selling status. If the author gets actively involved, then we get somewhere between 95 to 97%. So there's a percentage of people who just won't happen no matter what we do, because there are always situations that can come in a way to make that happen. So we're pretty clear about expectations of what we deliver and how.
Okay. All righty. So is it a group of you guys who get together and do the ghostwriting, or is it just a particular person who do the ghostwriting?
Oh, that's a great question. So for a particular book, it's a specific author. So typically, it depends. So let me answer your question. There's two questions you asked, even though you made one statement. So one is, when somebody comes to us and says, hey, listen, we'd like somebody to ghostwrite a book for us, at the moment, it's me. So it's Mitchell Levy doing the interview. And at some point in time, when I get too busy, I'm going to have to create a certification program for others to do interviews as well. But it's my favorite time of the day is to really help somebody pull out their genius. I just so love doing that. And then what we'll do is we've got a number of graduates from the AHA That Writing School. So we, based on the type of content, we will pair them with a graduate that has shown a proclivity to that subject area so that they're pretty good at what they do. So to answer your question, typically it's a single author who's doing the ghostwriting, or a single writer who's writing for a particular author.
Okay, you mentioned subject. When you're interviewing them, do you give them a subject that you're going to interview them on, or they just tell you what they want you to ghostwrite about?
What's their subject? It's their book. So, and typically their subject, even if we're ghostwriting, I still encourage our authors to fill out the first document, step number one, the four questions document. And typically what we will write about is the primary point of pain. I call it a CPOP, the primary point of pain or customer point of pain that they solve as part of their business.
Okay. Let's get on to our social media. How effective?
Oh, happy to. Oh, can I just add one more? Now that I wanted to make sure you got to ask your questions. One of the ways that people write themselves is they crowdsource content from others. So we have a book we're doing right now where I have assigned a ghostwriter. And what the ghostwriter is doing is we've had, I think it's 40 people contribute 4 or 5 answers to a question. So we created a Google form. We sent the Google form out to 200 people. We have 40 responses. And then the ghostwriter is basically pulling together those 40 responses into a book. I'm sorry, the 40 respondents who responded with 4 to 5 questions each. And so in this particular case, it's a book where there will be 40 contributors. And I've got just the appropriate writer who's actually pulling all the content together. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. It's okay. Almost like writing a book of, I can't even think of the word right now, but I understand exactly what you're saying. Okay, now let's get into social media. How effectively does social media, how can a person be effective in doing social media in only 5 minutes a day?
Nah, a second one of my favorite questions. So in the old days, when you asked me about thought leadership, what I mentioned was that our thought leaders were given to us by the publishing companies, the broadcast media, the publishers. And at that point in time, they also controlled the medium. They controlled how, as consumers, they controlled the content we were going to consume. With the internet, with the fact that everyone was given a microphone or a camera, right? You can take the quality of video you could take with your Android or Apple phone today is as good as significant pieces of equipment that you'd have to pay thousands of dollars for 10 years ago. I mean, the quality of stuff we can produce is absolutely amazing. And what happened, though, is very similar to, if you think about, I don't know if you ever seen somebody who brings a kid into a store and the store owner, and it's one of those stores like Woolworths or something, or trying to think of Wally World, whatever that is. So Walmart, right, where there's a microphone and the kid is so cute and the store owner or whoever's behind the desk says, hey, how'd you like to say hi over the loudspeaker? And as a parent, you're like cringing because you know what your kid's going to do. And what do? They go, hey, I can hear myself. Hey, look at me. You can hear me throughout the store, right? Look at me, right? And what was fascinating is this word called social media, because what most people do once we gave them the microphone is they say, what do most businesses do? What do most people do is they say, hey, look at me. I'm cool. Buy my product. Buy my service. And guess what? That's not how we can attract people to get to know us, to get to like us, to get to trust us. And so if you think about these two words, social media, what I'd say is of those two words, media is the fact that you have a microphone. Social is what you do to get people to like and trust you. And so 80% of what you do on social media should be focused on the like and trust part, not on the media piece. And so let me give you something to think about.
Okay.
And this is the question I get a lot is, how do you do social media in 5 minutes a day? So whether it's 5 minutes a day or 50 minutes a day, think about these ratios. When you wake up in the morning, you should spend 20% of your time, i.e. 1 minute, spend 1 minute sharing content that you find relevant. Now, that content doesn't have to be stuff you created. It could be something you created, or it could just simply be you're taking a look at other people's content, you like what they've done. And what I might suggest you do, go over to ahathat.com. There's 46,000 pieces of content that you could share today for free. So if you found a book that you like, you can share 3 pieces of content from that book, and you do that when you wake up in the morning. You spend a minute sharing content. And then go away for a couple hours, and then when you come back, spend 80% of your time interacting with the people who touch your content. Right? So what does that mean? If somebody shared your stuff or commented on it or liked it, you say thank you for a like, or you say, or you respond to their comment. So imagine, let's take a look at the physical world. You're sitting in an office. You send stuff to the printer, and somebody sees that you send stuff to the printer, and they bring it to you. Or somebody made a fresh cup of coffee. They know you like coffee, and they bring you a cup of coffee. Do you ignore them? Or do you say thank you? And most of us, if we've listened to our moms and our grandmoms or just to our hearts, most of us thank the person. And what happens if somebody brings you coffee or brings you their material off their printer for 3 days in a row and you've never looked up and you never thank them? They're going to stop doing it. So on social media, why, when people like our stuff, comment on our stuff, share our stuff, why do we actually ignore them? What do we expect to have happen if we ignore them? And what will happen is you won't create the following you need. What you need to do is interact, be social. If you're going to share content on social media and somebody comments on it, respond appropriately. And so that's the how do you do social media effectively in 5 minutes a day. You spend 20 minutes on sharing content, or I'm sorry, 20% of your time sharing content. You spend 80% of your time interacting with the people who touch your content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, sometimes when people comment or you comment on somebody else's page, they never acknowledge it, or they never, you know, they just don't interact with you, you know. So,
yeah, how does that make you feel?
Huh?
How does that make you feel?
Oh, it makes me feel, you know, that why am I even being bothered with them if they're not going to be responsive to me when I comment on their page or something, you know, because when people comment on my page, I at least, you know, give them a smiley face or a thank you or something, you know, because I just feel that's the proper thing to do. But going to other people's pages, commenting, they never acknowledge, you know, they never send a thank you or, you know, so it makes me, when I see their posts, you know, I just want to pass them up, but I still, you know, make a comment or whatever.
No, Gail, but this is beautiful. Actually, I'm going to say this is delicious. Because if you're in your listening audience right now and you're hearing this, right, think about your host. I do the same, right? If I'm commenting on other people's stuff and I'm ignored for a period of time, I guess what? I delete the site. I get rid of any references to it. I never recommend them, right? And maybe when I meet them in person, if they're nice in person, I'll put them back on my radar. But if somebody ignores me when I'm spending the time to comment on their stuff, they're not being social with me. They're not giving me the appropriate time of day. And so you're actually already practicing that. And I just have to say for those that are listening, if you're putting stuff on social media and your audience is not growing and you're not responding to the people who do comment or interact with you, you kind of know why now. And that is you've
right.
got to pay
and
attention
I
to those that you have.
Right. I have a lot of people who want to be my friend, but I just don't want to friend them because a lot of people on Facebook, some of those social media sites are just friend collectors to say I have this amount of friends. And I basically like to network with people and, you know, find out different things that people know, you know, sharing information and, you know, those sort of things is what I like. Because I wouldn't care if I only had two friends on there, you know, opposing. As a matter of fact, I am going to have to clean up my Facebook page because I went through it the other day and there's people on there I didn't even know, you know, were on my page. You know, they've been on there. I'd never heard from them or, you know, saw any of their posts come up. So I'm thinking about just deleting a lot of people who I haven't even had any type of interaction with on Facebook except for when they sent me a friend request.
Yeah. And this is one of those really interesting. So right now, unfortunately, you have to do that manually. But you can imagine,
yeah.
Let's fast forward a little bit. So let's fast forward just a couple years, whatever that time period is, and you actually say to your automated bot, your automated program, all right, anyone who I'm connected to on Facebook that's not a family or direct friend, somebody who you see in my calendar, and if we've had zero interaction since they've joined me as a friend, if we have done none of that, please get rid of them. right? So right now you have to manually see it yourself, and you might make some exceptions. But imagine talking to your computer, talking to your bot, and having that happen automatically, right? We're moving in that world. So, yeah, it's really – it's not about friends. It's about engagement.
Right.
And by the way, I if you're interested in friending me, I'm happy to interact with you because I like your
point
of view.
Well, I did send you a friend request.
You did. Beautiful. I'll have to look
for
it.
Yes, I did. I've already sent it.
Okay, thank you. Yay. Yeah. So the thing that's fascinating is who do we interact with and why? And it's not about the numbers, right? It's about and for those who really first level of this game, people always thought it was numbers. But what it really is, it's about engagement. If you put a post out there, how many people comment, how many people interact. And by the way, one of the only downsides with that is the social media companies keep changing the rules. So potentially, if you put a post out there yesterday, it could have gotten a certain amount of engagement. And if you put it out there today, it may get something completely different because the algorithms have changed, right? So that's the only downside. And that's why lots of people recommend that you should use social media, but also create, like you're doing here with this show, create your own media to reach out and interact with people.
Yeah. Yeah, because Facebook is nothing like it used to be when I first joined it, because I could, you know, I was interacting with the few people who were my friends, but now they're so far in the background, I rarely see their posts. And, you know, it's just so many changes that Facebook has gone through. So, like I said, I'm going to go through and clean up my friend list and get rid of all the dead weight that, you know, just when they were friending me to say I have, you know, because you can get 5,000 friends. So I guess they want to get their little 5,000 friends. And, you know, that's it. But I'm not a friend collector. You know, if you're not going to interact or, you know, network, or we have to keep in some type of contact on there, then it's no need in you even being on my friend list. So,
By the way, I just accepted your friend request. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
And another question I'd like to ask you, what are the top 5 thought leadership's best practices today?
So this is interesting, and actually you're practicing a number of them, right? So, but let's talk about number one. And so, just so you know, for those people who want to know where this came from, I run the Thought Leadership Best Practices group on LinkedIn. So this is the type of content that I've sort of looked at, consolidated, and came up with a top 5 list. Number one is to present yourself well. So what does that mean? If somebody is going to introduce me to somebody new, as a matter of fact, I just remember I met a realtor yesterday. I'm looking to have a service provider help me, whether it's, you know, doing a fence, painting a house, whatever. What's the first thing I'm going to do? I'm going to go to Google and I'm going to type in their name. And what I want to see come up is something that says, at the end of the day, it's going to bring me to a place where I can look at customer testimonials, and I want to see even testimonials. This person was good here. This person was not good here. I just want to see. So present yourself well. So if you Google your name and you don't like what you see, fix it. Number one, thought leadership best practice is make sure if somebody finds you on social media, and by the way, you got to make it so people could find you on social media. If somebody finds you on social media, that you actually present well. Number two is to consistently share your and other people's content. So basically, be the recognized expert because you're sharing good, compelling content. That doesn't mean you have to continually create and originate new content. It just means you're sharing good content. I'll just put it out there again. Feel free to go to ahathat.com. There's 46,000 pieces of content, and it's free to share. So feel free to share that or wherever it is that you are consuming data. If you see something you like, make a note, and that morning when you wake up, the following morning, then share it. Number three, and this is something you've done as well, and that's write a book. Write a book and use it to drive leads. Because the concept of being an author is still one of the most quintessential elements that says you're an expert at what you do. You're good at what you do. Whether or not it's true or not, there's still a perception that is, if you're an author, you're an expert. And books are a phenomenal way. And once again, I'm talking to books, not fiction books. I can't really address that really well. We've done a lot of experiments on fiction books, and of all my experiments, only one have worked. So, and I don't know if I can repeat it. So I'm continually looking at that. So on a nonfiction side, that book is that thing that is significantly better than your business card. So that's three. Present, you know, number one, present well. Number two, consistently share your and other people's content. Number three, author a book. Number four is exactly what you're doing here. Create your own thought leadership channel. So whether it's going to Blog Talk Radio and creating your own show, or whether it's going and doing a blog post and you're doing that consistently, and there are many different places you can write your blog post, it's creating content, your own thought leadership channel, where you're sharing stuff on a continual level. And I've got three or four places, so I'm actually just about ready to create a consolidated level of my thought leadership so I can share. Basically, I could pick the best of the things that myself and my team are producing and create a best of location, which I'm very excited about that.
Oh, okay.
Let's look at number five. And by the way, if you don't mind, when we're done, ask me a question about AHA That Radio, because that's brand new. It's probably not even on that cheat sheet you have. Number five,
Okay.
And this is something you don't hear. This is something you don't hear often. It's creating a best of list. Right, so it's the creating a list of the top 10 or top 25 or top 50 thought leaders or influencers in your space. Now think about how cool this is. So you're a company, or even if you're an individual working in a particular space, what you do, create a beautiful graphic and then create a list of the best of. What you do, now here's the interesting, you don't just create a list and publicize it. You create a list, and then you tell those people on the list that they're on the list. You get them motivated to want to share that they're part of the list, right? So it's an opportunity for you to meet the best of the influencers in your space. And particularly for companies, it's a great way to get the influencers to get to know who they are and why, and get to meet them on a first-level basis. So you're hoping as a company, the next time you put out a new product, you've got, if it's a best of 50 list, you got 50 new friends, some of which will share about you. So those are really the five best practices. You know, present well, consistently share content, author a book, create your own thought leadership channel, and compile a best of list.
Wow, that's really powerful. That is really powerful. And I've written all that
down.
And hopefully, listen, audience, like I said, I hope you had your pens and paper taking notes, or you can definitely go to the site. And the last question I want to ask you is,
before you ask this question, can I talk to you about AHA That Radio?
Sure. I was going to get to that at the end anyway, but sure, you can talk about it.
Oh, well, you have to decide, because we're running out of time, right? So I want to make sure I get to cover that.
Well, I've given you more time because we just, you know, this the subject and the topic is so juicy. So you have time.
Well, thank you. Oh, I'm looking at my time. Oh yeah, we're already overboard. So let's just talk about this. So AHA That Radio. So if you go there now, we just released that this week. It's AHA That Radio. So AHATHAT Radio. .com. And what we're doing is we're allowing our authors to read their AHA books. Essentially, their books have 140 bite-sized quotes and 7 blog posts. And it takes about a half hour if you're listening to it. And these books are chock full of AHA messages. And so if you go to ahathatradio.com, you're actually hearing 24 hours a day AHA messages. So if you're interested in being inspired in some way or another, hearing people talk about AHA messages, sharing their AHA moments, these are really powerful, and it streams 24 hours a day. So that's ahathatradio.com.
Okay. So I hope you guys got that. That's ahathatradio.com. Okay. Now, the last question that I wanted to ask you was, how can you take one piece of content and turn it into 5 or 10 platforms? How do you do that?
So for those that are interested, so one of the programs we do, I got a program I work on with a guy who does door-to-door sales for solar called Grow Your 1099. And we practice it there. So if you're interested, go to aha.pub/growyour1099. I've got another program that I do, and this is for thought leadership, and it's called Thought Leader Life. So just, it's exactly how it sounds, thought, T-H-O-U-G-H-T, leader, L-E-A-D-E-R, life.com. So at thoughtleaderlife.com, I actually show what you do. So if you go to the homepage, you get to see, the recent episodes that we've been doing. And then if you click on the blueprint, what it'll show you is how we take a single piece of content and turn it into 4 or 5 different formats and share it on 10 plus platforms. And in essence, it starts off with doing a 15-minute or a half-hour interview. So for every half-hour interview that we do, we have that content in video format, Zoom video for that, or Zoom webinar, so we're capturing it on video. We strip out the audio, and we share the audio on a podcast channel. We then create a blog post that sort of summarizes and gives information about the session itself. I also then have a ghostwriter who's going in, and out of every half-hour interview, if you have an interactive discussion with somebody else, every half-hour produces somewhere between 40 to 50 aha messages, 40 to 50 opportunities to capture somebody's feelings, their opinion, their thoughts. And then what we typically do is we'll do 4 shows with a particular co-host, and we'll end up producing out of those 4 shows. And typically, if I grab a co-host, I grab them for the month, we do actually 4.5 shows. That half show is 15 minutes covering what we're going to talk about. So we end up with 4.5, or let's say 5 shows. We'll end up with 5 videos, 5 audios, 6 blog posts, because we create a summary blog post. And then we'll create an aha book out of that. It'll be 140 bite-sized quotes and 7 blog posts. So we have an aha book that's at the aha that platform. And on that platform, we share the content in Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+. So underneath each aha message is a button that allows you to share on your network to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+. And we also turn that, typically with aha that, we turn it into a PDF and a Kindle. And for those authors that are interested, we also turn it into physical books as well. And once it's, of course, on Kindle, it's another ebook platform. When it gets to physical books, then we're at paperback and hardcover. And so, in essence, what we're doing is we're taking conversations and a good orchestrated questionnaire, good orchestrated opportunities to interact with somebody, and turning that into digestible content in a number of different formats on a number of different platforms.
Okay. Wow. Well, we definitely went to school tonight. Yes. Yes, I learned quite a bit myself, and I do have some notes here that I did take down that I am going to visit, the AHA websites, and I am on LinkedIn as well. I haven't been on it in a while, but I am going to go on there and send you a friend request, and I already sent it on Facebook. Oh, now, Twitter, I'm not too Twitter suave. I really don't know the ins and outs of working Twitter. I'm going to have to find someone to show me that, but I do have a site on Twitter.
Can I address that for a second? So what I'm going to say, Gail, is it's where you want to play is the places that your customers are going to be, right? So if you don't think any of your customers are on Twitter, then you don't need to be there. If you think you are, and in today's world, this is what's super cool, and my son taught me this. If you think you're interested in Twitter, go to YouTube and say, how do I use Twitter? You could spend a couple hours to 10 hours watching videos on how people use Twitter effectively. So put in the word, how to use Twitter effectively, or how to use Twitter as an author, or how to use Twitter as a business, right? And and take a look at the videos and start watching. And that's part of the democratization of content. It's people, one of the ways that people share content is they learn something, they create a video, they put it up on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's a great way to learn and grow.
Right, because YouTube you can has a lot of things on it that you can that will help you with any situation. I do know that, so I'll do that because I do have some. I do get little messages and things from Twitter, but like I said, I really don't know how to work it. And the time that I had went on there, I forgot. I think a friend of mine had introduced me to Twitter. But as far as, like, you know, using it, because I have interact with a few people on there and friended some people on there, but like I said, I hadn't been on there in a while. But this conversation, this interview was very, very interesting, and hopefully my listening audience got something out of it. I'm quite sure they did. And tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
No, absolutely. So I got a couple of things to say. Hey, listen, if you're listening, if you want to just hear AHA messages and get inspired, go to ahathatradio.com. If you want content to share, go to ahathat.com. And in particular, if you want to figure out how to write your book in 8 hours or less or have us write for you, go to ahathat.com/author. For those that are interested in connecting to me, you can Google Mitchell Levy. That's M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, last name L-E-V-Y. And the social media companies have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that when you Google my name, that their site will come up associated with my name, bring you directly to my profile. And so feel free to connect to me on the platform that you want to connect on. So whether that's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, Pinterest, or Snapchat, connect to me on a platform that you want to interact with, and I'll do my best to answer your questions or point you in the right direction, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm definitely going to keep in touch with you because, like I said, I've learned a wealth of information this evening, and I do appreciate your coming on. And, you know, like I said, hopefully my listening audience did take notes, because if you didn't take notes, please contact the AHA guy, Mitch Levy, because I'm not giving up anything. He's the one you have to go to.
Well, no, I mean, you can, right? If people are curious.
Oh, yeah. I'm just kidding. But, you know,
something?
Just letting them know that, you know, it would be much better if they were to come to you, because you you have all the information that they would need, opposed to what I would give them, because I took down a few notes. So, you know, this is why I'm directing them directly to you. But it's okay if they want to inbox me and ask me a few questions. I'll give them the notes that I've taken down, and, you know, still I will refer them to you, though.
Oh, I know. I hear you. But here's my recommendation. If you if you actually your view on how you interacted with this interview is going to be different than theirs. So if your audience wants to hear a summary of your note-taking, you should spend a couple minutes after we're done summarizing your note, put it into a PDF, and anyone who wants to reach out to you, reach out directly and ask for your notes. And that's a great way to get your audience to be engaged with you.
Okay. I'll consider that. I will consider that. Yeah, but, you know, you
and
I
are... All right, if you're listening to this, you ask, you know, and then Gail will make a decision, right? Okay.
Right. So we're going to give you a great big round of applause. I hope we are.
I heard that death silence. Let's see, if you're in the woods and a tree falls, so, yeah, it was a whole bunch of people who had one hand. I imagined a million people with one hand clapping. So thank you.
Let's see if we can get this going here. Come on.
There we go. They found their other hand.
Yeah, so I want to thank my listening audience. I want to thank my sister Ruby, who is one of my favorite listeners, and also everybody on the switchboard. Mike is not here. He's from Singapore. He listens in sometimes. And another guy from Chicago, but there are other people that I don't really recognize who they are. But thank you for listening, and, you know, hopefully everybody's having a beautiful week. If you're out and about and you're drinking and driving, don't do it, because I like talking to you, not about you. Love seeing you, not viewing you. I love each and every one of you. With that being said, everybody have a good night. And thanks again, Mitchell, for being my special guest this evening.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Take care, everybody.
Good night.
Bye now. Good night.
You just listened to the number one radio station on the internet, Delicious Talk Radio. Thank you and good night.